College Golf Talk, it is back one more time. The final one of this season. Brentley Romine, Steve Burkowski with you, fresh off a couple of weeks at La Costa, here to digest, review, look back at what we saw from the men. And you know what? I think we've found a good place there. 12 months after basically the renovation, the golf course is good. It's growing in. It's maturing. It's receptive. It's tough. And when you look at the teams that made it to match play for the men, 8 of the top 10 teams in the country. I mean, a year ago, the two number one teams in the country won it all in Stanford and Auburn. So I'm kind of good with it. I know a lot of people will say, oh, the West Coast, and it favors this, that, and the other. I didn't see a West Coast sweep of championships, so why not?
Yeah, and the same deal with Greyhawk as well. We didn't – I mean, obviously we saw a couple teams from that region sort of win, but Ole Miss women won there.
Wake women, you know, won there.
So, I mean, yeah, and the thing about La Costa too – I mean, gosh, that was a fun week and a half there, and it went by really quickly, and that's kind of my barometer for, you know, for how compelling, you know, the golf is, how compelling the overall atmosphere is when things go quickly. You know, the last thing that we want is for us to kind of bemoan waking up every day and like, oh, like another day, like when do I go home? And you know, they've really done a great job. I think what John Fields has done with the foundation and kind of all the ancillary things they have going on is great. But as far as the golf course too, I have a pretty good recollection of holes, Burko, and there are some golf courses, and I think Greyhawk was probably one of those, where I could not recall you every single hole. Now that we're 2 years into La Costa, I can recall pretty great detail at least 16 or 17 of the holes.
And it's funny you say that, because 9 out of 10 courses, I can't tell you a month later what the fourth hole played like. And when I went to Sunningdale for the Curtis Cup last year, drove around once with Rachel Drummond, who's was part of the World Feed, and boom, boom, boom. And I can still remember the back-to-back par fives, or the short par four, or the finishing stretch. So to your point, as I went rogue, I can now remember a good bit of the back nine, which is where we see the bulk of our coverage. Or if we finish on 8 and 9, a par three with a wedge in hand, half the time that people don't hit the green. It's a great par three. 9, how far are you going to push it down the right-hand side? So to your thoughts on that, yes, it's gaining traction. Let's be real honest. Everyone's staying on site. There is a convenience factor that for the teams. Helps. Forget about us, but yeah. They can roll out of their room and they're there.
And it's a really good spectator course as well. We had some pretty chilly temperatures for the men's final, at least. And so I think that kept a few people home. But yeah, it's a golf course that, especially 15 through 18, a very good stretch, and it's all bunched up there. Once you get all of those matches kind of around that area, that atmosphere is actually pretty electric relative to, you know, it's not a Masters or a US Open, obviously, but in our line of work with college golf, it's a pretty cool thing. And as far as strategy and, you know, who the golf course favors, you mentioned 8 of the top 10. Well, Florida State, you know, also a top 10 team, finished, you know, just out of the, just out of match play. So it clearly identifies the best, but I also think it brings in some different types of players as well, at least individually. And we saw, you know, some players who may not, you know, factor at some of these big wide open courses where you can just bomb and gouge it everywhere and there's high rough. Like, Gil does a really good job and, you know, of designing golf courses where there's a little bit more to it than just, right, let's just put bunkers and rough and water everywhere. And, you know, we certainly see that. I mean, 14 is a great hole. 6, that par 5, the green's a little severe, but it's still a pretty cool hole. I think it brings a lot into it. You mentioned 9. That's probably one of my favorite holes on property. And then, of course, you get into 16, 15, 16, 17, 18. I'm still 18 is probably my least favorite hole on the course. But it still has provided a lot of interesting moments, including did you almost see me get hit by the golf ball on,
A lot of golf balls went rogue out there, so you gotta narrow that down.
All right, so it was, I think it was Oklahoma State and Ole Miss. It was the Ethan Fang match, and he was playing, was he playing Tom Fisher?
Ethan
I think so, in the
Fang,
semis. So
yeah.
they both hit it over to the water. Ethan's ball was sitting in the water, but still, like, half the ball was still above water.
Yes, yes, yes.
Fisher was in a rough, kind of a rough spot, but he went first and he hit it down the fairway. I'm standing there over about 90 degrees left in the middle of the fairway. There's people around me. All of a sudden, the coach texts me. I'm looking at my phone, I look at the scores, and I look back up. No one's there, and there's a ball about 20 yards to my left. Ethan Fang had gone out almost sideways, and I don't know if the ball went over me, but yeah, I was kind of stuck out there in no man's land, and I was just glad that, I was not on the broadcast now, because obviously if I was, that would have been more of a recollection for you. So crisis averted.
Yeah, it was a blast. So we start with that Monday. What stands out to me, Virginia liked the women posting, waiting, seeing if they had done enough. Florida State also jumps out to me, how they didn't qualify. We have given all the accolades, platitudes to Luke Clanton in the last 12 months, and he's earned every single one of them. You can't come back to school to win a national title and shoot 76 on the last day.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, he's that good.
Yeah,
It's got you've got to find a way to get it done.
it was a weird vibe with that team all week. They never quite felt like, want to say they weren't confident. You just never felt like they had that swagger or that edge that this team has had so much in the past. And maybe part of that is because they knew that they were not playing their best golf. I mean, clearly they didn't, because Florida State, I mean, when you have all those guys like a Luke Clanton, Tyler Weaver, Gray Albright, when they're playing their best, they're not finishing ninth in stroke play. So that was part of that. But yeah, I mean, again, like for as poorly as Luke played that final day, he still gave himself a chance. And gosh, I thought he was going to make that putt on 9-2. He barely misses it left. And that would have been a really cool moment for college golf. And it was disappointing. And I really think that the average fan, the casual fan, would have loved having Luke Clanton in match play. And I do think that if they would have edged Ole Miss there, they probably would have at least won one match, because they're more of a match play team, I think, anyways. But yeah, that certainly stands out to me. The other thing is, I mentioned Ole Miss. Kudos to them. Chris Malloy has not had a good record of getting through regionals. This was only the third time in about a decade of him as the coach there in Oxford of making it to the NCAA championship. But I kind of made this comment to him earlier in the week. I'm like, well, when you get there, your batting average is pretty good, because Braden Thornberry wins the individual title. Now Michael Lasasso wins the individual title. And we touched on it a bunch in the broadcast, but everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong for Ole Miss in recent years, whether it was the stomach virus last year that took Lasasso out for a couple of months, really, or everyone getting the flu in Puerto Rico, or Emerson, their assistant, taking the golf ball off the head, or the sea urchin with Michael Lasasso stepping on it in Cabo. It was good to see that program and Chris Malloy and Michael Lasasso get another NCAA title, albeit it wasn't the one they wanted.
Others that gave chase attempted to P Meisham in the mix. I thought when Jackson Koivun made the turn, got within, I believe, three on that back nine, then he rattled off a bunch of bogeys. We had drama, but I wouldn't say it necessarily, selfishly from a TV standpoint, we're always looking for the possibility of, you know, a playoff or something along those lines.
we're not looking for a possibility of a playoff with TV, right?
it's a give and take. We had a little room if we needed to. But then we go to match play. And again, what's that?
BYU real quick. I want to talk a little bit about BYU.
Never brought it up because it didn't need to be brought up.
Well, so there obviously were a lot of coaches, you know, still upset. It seems like every year that they get in, it's like, oh, well, they have an advantage or a disadvantage. To me, I think after seeing them play their round on Thursday, they shot one over. It was a great round. And talking to them, I think it is a disadvantage to play early. And here's why. You're playing by yourself. So you can't see your playing competitors hit shots, how balls react on the greens, putts, things of that nature. You're playing completely blind. It's almost like you're playing blindfolded, as one of their players, Cole Ponich, said. Yes, the conditions probably are a little bit easier because we're coming off just a day after the women's championship. Probably the greens will be a little bit softer and more receptive than they will be 3 days later. But you also have no understanding of how hard or easy the course can play. And that's another that kind of goes back to playing blind a little bit. And so for as much as maybe a perceived advantage it could be in years where they don't get any wind and all of a sudden you get a ton of wind on Sunday, I do think it's a disadvantage. And so that's my take. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there.
I did the numbers. I believe the one over for the third round that BYU played on Thursday. And if people wondering what they talk about, they get a waiver from the NCAA because due to beliefs with the institution, they do not compete as a team for the school on Sunday. So they had the third or fourth best round of the of 30 teams. Doesn't necessarily seem fair. The average score on Sunday by the other 29 teams were in the neighborhood of 7 to 8 over par. But then I had someone else from the NCAA say, if you had three rounds, you would never sign up for 2 in the afternoon and 1 in the morning. Counterpoint, which is what BYU does. We were ready to share the information, the facts. My producer's like, time for BYU. I said, no, it's not, because they're not going to make the 8. To me, I don't want to take away from what's going on. Now, if they were coming down the last 2 or 3 holes right there, then that narrative would have been shared factually, informatively. But that's it. No opinions, yeah. No editorializing. I'll come clean. I'm glad it never became a storyline, because then I think, and everyone's entitled to their opinions, rightfully so, you're going to start talking more about that than actually what's going on. So
it's going to continue to be an issue.
One day it will. Yes. One day it will happen. Maybe not in our lifetime, but we'll see.
We'll talk about it at the
not in my professional.
Podcast. They're going to be they're going to be really good next year, really good.
We jump to the 8, the quarterfinals. Virginia taking down Auburn. Let's call it the start of the redemption tour. Auburn beat them last year in the quarters. Auburn won a national title. Bedlam kind of belonged to Oklahoma State. Florida with a nice rally those last two matches to beat Texas. And then who did – I'm drawing a blank. Who did
– Ole Miss beat ASU. The Iceman. Yeah. How could you forget that one? That was the
Miaseth, best one. Yes, you're right. Well, it's a blur. It all bleeds together. What Fisher did coming down the stretch to respond, that was heady stuff. And then it's the quick turnaround. It's Virginia's redemption tour in the semis continuing, beating Florida – a team they lost to 2 years ago at match play on the way to a Gators national title. And then we had the bonus golf late in the evening, Oklahoma State, Ole Miss. I'm glad there was a winner on that hole because I'm not sure they were going to play any more golf on Tuesday evening. It was a back and forth battle. You had another match go extra holes with far from stellar golf. It was whose four tires wouldn't fall off all at once, even though they tried. But it's part of the dynamic. You know, sometimes it's not great golf. I mean, when you see one person hit it in the water on 16 and the second one follows them, or one hits it 50 yards right and the other hits it 50 yards left, would never say it's comical because they're good, but you kind of scratch your head and you're like, who's going to find a way to just maybe make a par to win a golf hole?
Yeah, what was it? 2-3 putts on 16 for Fallberg Johnson, a shank on 18 with the second or third shot, I think it was.
Third shot over the green.
Cameron Tankersley, you have to – well, two things for him. I think you have to tip your hat to him because the short game and the scrambling ability that he displayed – and granted, he was hitting some drives where Fallberg Johnson was standing about 3 feet from him. I got sent a pretty crazy screenshot on 17 on one of those holes. But just the resilience that he displayed when clearly he didn't have his best stuff. And then also taking the time to talk with us afterwards. You know, earlier in the week, we're not going to name names, but, you know, was rudely told no by a certain assistant coach. And, you know, we'll just leave it at that. But kudos to Cameron Tankersley for showing the grace and the class for, you know, answering a couple questions. Look, we are never going to put guys in a tough spot or grill them. They are simple, you know, talk about the match. What are the emotions? What did you prove to yourself, you know, this season? And for seniors, what will you remember about your time at so-and-so school? And so, you know, those are just my thoughts there. But, you know, kind of going back to, you mentioned the Fisher and Michael Miasek match. It was interesting because before Miasek chipped in there on 7, Emerson, the assistant at Ole Miss, told Tom, he's like, he's gonna chip this in. So just be ready to make it. And lo and behold, he did. And it's interesting. You just kind of get those feelings playing match play and then stuff like that happens. But we had a lot of really good, whether it was extra holes or putts to win or chip-ins like that. And, you know, I did the pregame on Wednesday and, you know, just talking about, you know, the fact that how could Wednesday possibly live up to the first 2 days? I don't know if it did, but it was a high bar because that was some of the most fun 2 or 3 hours there on Tuesday evening. You know, following those matches, and especially that, you know, that Oklahoma State Ole Miss bout.
It is always good theater to see who moved on, and it was Virginia, it was Oklahoma State. We did breakfast with Burko, with Bowen Sargent and Alan Bratton, and got the intel and the storylines that you would share or I would weave in, and, you know, two polar opposites of a program that had been around for 72 years, Virginia, that won its first ever ACC title, had never won a national championship. To me, they felt like the Northwestern women from a week earlier. Good building, no disrespect, not that blue blood top five program every year and every, you know, each and every year. And for a while, the way they started, I said, son of a gun, it's going to happen against a program that is the modern day standard. Oklahoma State, 11 national titles. We're not burying the lead. They've got number 12 now after that win. The third most in the history of college golf. It had been 7 years. Alan Bratton, they're young. Four sophomores, a freshman. They went 19 events over a year and change without winning. Then they won the Stevens Cup. They pretty much ran the table the back half of the spring with a couple of transfers and a stout player in Preston and a precocious talent in Fallberg Johnson. I mean, it was intriguing to see how the pieces all fell together, because it maybe didn't necessarily feel like the typical Oklahoma State roster And I mean that with the highest of praise, because you look at that team from 18 and you've got, what, three of them already tour winners. And but they're good. And they kind of hung around and they kind of flit, you know, Gavin Lane. I mean, he was done and dusted until he wasn't. And then he flips the narrative. So it was fun. It was good to watch and had just enough drama down the stretch.
I liked that pun there. Stout player named Preston.
Felt right. Felt right.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think in the fall, I'm not even sure if I had this team ranked in the top 10 preseason wise, but it was just a matter of, you know, could the two Cal transfers acclimate? I knew nothing about Philip Fahlberg Johnson from Sweden. And so I really feel like Alan Bratton, I don't know when they announced Coach of the Year, but to be able to do this in year one with this group and so many moving parts, and, you know, people don't know this too, but they had a bunch of guys on this roster who, you know, who didn't play much, who were entering the transfer portal. So there's a lot of moving parts with this team, and for them to finish with the number two national ranking, with a national championship, and to be able to do what they did on, you know, on the end of that front nine, starting the back nine, and flip most of those matches, because Virginia was at one point early in the afternoon, they were up in each of the last four matches, correct?
They were up in four of the five matches.
And Paul Chang was two up on Gavin Lane through seven, proceeded to lose the next two holes, went one down at 12, and then Gavin Lane, you know, basically put the pedal down and sped away there. But yeah, I mean, I'm really impressed by this team. They're going to get a lot better. They're adding Henry Guan, potentially a transfer too. I saw a guy who was in the portal with another team that was eliminated earlier in the week. He stayed and watched every single match, including on Wednesday. So we'll see if I read the tea leaves there correctly and he ends up there. But I also think, as far as, and we love stories, and I finished my main gamer on the flight back yesterday because I was too exhausted to write until the wee hours of the morning. On Wednesday, early Thursday morning, probably one of the cooler anniversary type deals when you think about 30 years ago, 1995, at the Scarlet Course in Columbus. Alan Bratton was a member, was a senior on that Oklahoma State team that was three shots down going into the final round, ends up being in a playoff against Tiger Woods and Stanford, but they have to play a man down.
Yeah, it's Leif Westerberg gets on a plane, goes to the amateur championship. They're not supposed to be in a playoff. They are. Tiger's a freshman, misses a couple he never missed for the next 25 years. Bratton starts making them. And lo and behold, national title for Oklahoma State. But yeah, there were a lot of, and you did a wonderful job in your story, and Alan Bratton shared a lot of that with us, but you took it to a different level.
Yeah, and then what we didn't know, correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't know what he had told, what he then told us, right? Like, that was a first for you about the Trip Keeney. Yeah. And the door and the note.
So I knew there were notes, but I never, all the layers that were peeled back. No, I'm old, but I was just finishing college when that was happening.
So there was a longtime writer. He's kind of like the probably
the
OG.
Standard.
Yeah, the unquestioned standard in college golf coverage, Ron Balicki, who died of cancer in 2014. But he was, I mean, everyone loved Ron. Ron loved college golf. A couple of quick stories about Ron and that Ricky Fowler, when he decided he was going to turn pro. You know, today guys would go on Instagram or through their agency and do all these like crazy activations and announcements. Ricky called Ron Balicki. He's the only person he told as far as media members, and Ron wrote the story. And so that was how Ricky Fowler, arguably the biggest brand or one of the top 10 biggest brands of my lifetime in professional golf, that's how he did it. And then the other story about Ron is, there was one summer he would always cover the Northeast Amateur, and he would MC the long drive contest. Well, one year at Golf Week, Jeff Babineau, who also passed away recently, decided that he was going to mix up the travel schedule for different riders and send, you know, someone else to the Northeast Amateur. And Ron says, well, do you mind if I take vacation that week then? And Babs goes, sure. Like, where are you going to go? Are you going to go, you know, someplace nice? And he goes, I'm going to go to the Northeast Amateur. So this is a guy who loved amateur and college golf so much that when told he couldn't cover the Northeast Amateur, he decided to take vacation to cover it anyways. And they ended up letting him cover it after that. He didn't have to take vacation, but I thought that was cool. But picking up on this, where it ties in with 1995, and Ron used to always pick the champion. In his lifetime, he only picked three correctly. That was one of those years. So he picked Oklahoma State. Well, they weren't, you know, I guess this was more tongue in cheek, but they weren't very happy about that because they knew what that meant. So the night before the final round, Tripp Keeney and a couple other guys come home or come to their back to their hotel, and there's some sticky notes on their doors. And on Tripp's door, it says, believe in destiny. So he writes it on his golf ball. They win the playoff. Alan Bratton makes a 30 or 35 footer that ends up clinching it. And Tripp tells the story of the note and believe in destiny and the golf ball. And Ron writes the story. Well, as Alan Bratton tells us on Wednesday morning, he said, I always had a feeling that Ron was the guy who wrote the note. And so in the early 2000s, Bratton was working for Ping at the time. And at one of the championships, he cornered Ron and finally got him to admit that he was the one who wrote the note. And so, I mean, kudos to Alan. He did this at 2018 as well, but he just said you can't have an NCAA championship, especially one on Golf Channel now with, you know, guys making, you know, thousands of dollars in NIL and flying private jets and the exposure of the sport. You just can't have an NCAA championship without mentioning Ron Bilicki. So he was, you know, gracious enough to tell us that story on Wednesday morning. And then he spoke a little bit about that in the post-game team interview on Golf Central. And I just thought it was a really nice touch and a way to tie in, you know, some historical perspective to, you know, modern day when it seems like all we talk about is money and things like that. And I just thought it was really, really refreshing for Alan Bratton to do that.
Yeah, it was on my list of things to weave in if the opportunity presented itself, and it never quite did because it was back and forth and back and forth and then boom, boom, boom. And then when you're over thinking about 18 and you're seeing where third shots are being played from, as great of a story, no, I need to let the golf take center stage. So I'm glad you were able to talk to them about it after, write the story.
And Ethan Fang, actually, I didn't know this. He wrote it on his golf ball, BID.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't have – none of us would have known that during the round unless we were all over it, which you can't be everywhere at once. Quick pivot moving forward, three or four teams that feel like we could be discussing them again 12 months from now and – gosh, you would have to probably start front and center with Oklahoma State because they're not losing anybody.
Yeah, and you add
at least as we know in this day of the portal.
Well, the portal just closed, so I think they're good. But like I said, I believe they're going to add a transfer, potentially a player from the ACC. I don't know if that's going to happen, but he was out watching, and I don't know why you would be if unless it was close to a done deal. So they're going to have to fit him in. They're going to have to fit Henry Guan in, who is, you know, a top four or five recruit. He actually reclassified. He was supposed to be a 26, and now he's a 25. So this is a loaded team with a lot of mouths to feed, but you would anticipate, you know, the guys like Ethan Fang and Preston Stout continuing to develop. They were first-team All-Americans this season. I would expect both to have a really good shot to make the Walker Cup team. So, yeah, they're number one in my book, unless something drastic happens over these next couple of months. Virginia is another team that's got to be up there, especially with Ben James and Brian Lee both coming back. They're going to be seniors next year. Paul Chang. I was trying to do the math. I guess 3 years of club golf don't count towards your eligibility. So he has one more year. Texas, they bring everybody back. Luke Potter, Tommy Morrison, Christian Moss. Danny Bennett is a kid. He was the Phil Mickelson Award winner, I believe. He's my pick to break out and really take the next step. I know he was ranked in the top 10 individually this season, but he's the real deal. He has a lot of tools. We'll be talking about his story a lot more next year as well. You know, started was born in Botswana, which I had to check on a map to actually see where Botswana was, but born in Botswana, went to high school in Zimbabwe, moved to Victoria, British Columbia around COVID. The family's house burnt down. They moved back to South Carolina, or not South Carolina, South Africa, close. You know, difference of about 15 hours, but back to South Africa, and he became one of the top, you know, South African juniors, you know, following in the footsteps of Dylan Fratelli and Brandon Stone and Christian Moss. So Texas, I think, is up there. Florida, they lose Ann Gilligan, but they bring in a lot of firepower. Josh Bye, Noah Kent, who transferred from Iowa, had to sit out in the spring. And then it's really up for grabs, I think, for kind of that fifth spot. Ole Miss, certainly there. Oklahoma's always going to be good. Auburn adds Logan Riley, the number one ranked 2025 recruit. But we talked about this team earlier, and I'll close with them, Burko. BYU is going to be really, really, really good. You lose Cole Ponich, but Cooper Jones is going to be back after doing his mission. They add Jackson Moss. They add Kihei Akina, who might be the best 2025 when it's all said and done. Logan Riley, I obviously mentioned, is number one, but I think Kihei Akina, a lot of schools were after him. So it was good that BYU were able to get them. And I think they got a transfer too. They got Parker Bunn, a sophomore from Oklahoma State. Hasn't done much in college, but you know, if Oklahoma State takes you, there's something there. So it'll be interesting to see. BYU has a lot of depth, a lot of talent, and I think we'll be talking about them posting a good round on Thursday next year at La Costa.
And it will be here before we know it, as this wraps up college golf talk for this season. Always a pleasure, my friend. We've got busy summers ahead. Life,
what's your schedule?
Moves. Well, we both have golf's longest day. We're doing this on Friday. We've got golf's longest day on Monday. And then I go to Connecticut for studio work, then U.S. Open and featured groups. And I'm going to take a little time off to find a new place to live. Leave it at that. An exciting new place to live. So we got a big journey on tap. So that will allow that to happen. And then a run of girls juniors, junior AM, women AM, USAM, Walker Cup at Cypress. So it's a nice lull and pivot in zip code. And then a lot of amateur golf during the summer, which we are thrilled to be a part of.
Well, we'll see a lot of each other, because that's almost mimics my schedule. I'll be up at the women's AM for a couple of days, though I'll be playing probably more golf than I will be working. And then late summer in San Francisco. What was the quote? The coldest winter I've ever spent was a summer in.
It was a summer in San Francisco. It never warms up there. But we'll layer up and we'll do the same at Cypress for the Walker Cup. And then we'll probably start firing this up right around the Walker Cup and kick off the upcoming college golf season.
Yeah, I might do a I think we can do it.
Yeah, we'll figure
I might
it out.
Do a couple. I might do a couple summer interviews, a little bit of college golf talk, extra credit. But yeah, we'll be. I'll be starting the preseason research here in about 5 or 6 weeks, and then we'll be full speed ahead.
Yeah,
it was a blast. This was great. Yeah. We were pretty consistent. We right around the birth of George, we missed a week or two, but that was all me. But otherwise, I think we gave the people what they wanted. Hopefully,
yeah, we thank them, because we do get a text or someone will come up to us and, oh, we love it, keep going. And I think I always scratch my head of, why is anyone listening to us? But they are. As my wife says, you've got a following. It's a select handful, but they're passionate and they're loyal.
They are passionate, and we love them.
Yeah, and we thank them for it as always. We will bring it on back in September to kick off the new season. But have a great summer, a safe summer, and for the last time in 2024, 2025, for Brentley Romine, I'm Steve Burkowski saying so long from College Golf Talk.